It's a big day today. For the first time in history, a former president is going in for an arraignment because he's been criminally indicted. 38 counts. This is not a good day for America. This is not a good day for the world. Banana Republic. Can you say those two words? Hello, everyone. Welcome to the program. I am Trish Regan. Always good to see you. Always good to have you here. I'm very excited because we have coming up in just a couple of minutes, my very good friend, Debbie D'Souza. Now, Debbie, if you don't know her, she's actually married to Dinesh D'Souza, a very good friend as well. And they together have produced some really fascinating documentaries over the last decade or so. The other thing about Debbie is that she actually hails originally from Venezuela. Her entire family is from Venezuela. She has a lot of relatives still there. And when she thinks back to what Venezuela was and what it has become, she's reminded of what we're going through in various stages right here. So she's a good one to talk to in light of everything that's happened. We'll be hearing from Debbie D'Souza just momentarily. In the meantime, I want to point out portions of the program are brought to you by Legacy Precious Metals. Go to legacypminvestments.com to invest in gold or silver today. Again, it's legacypminvestments.com. 1-866-589-0560. You know, look, with everything going on, a lot of people, understandably, are worried about inflation, myself included. Well, one of the ways experts say you can help, hopefully, to hedge that inflation is by making the investment in something like gold. Because gold has been around for thousands of years, and we certainly hope it continues to be around in some way, shape, or form for thousands of years. So this is one of the things that people look to kind of hedge out some of those risks in their portfolio. I'm not giving investment advice. I don't do that. But I am telling you that if you're interested in investing in gold, these are the guys to call. 1-866-589-0560. Or you can go and actually buy and sell gold and silver right there online. 1-866-589-0560. Anyway, all of this is happening today, of course, down in Miami. It's going to be happening just in a couple of hours now. And we're already seeing protesters gather there outside the courthouse because, again, this is a big deal. Now, it's like, okay, well, it's happening over and over and over again, right? We saw the whole thing there with the whole Stormy Daniels situation just a few weeks ago and Alvin Bragg making a name for himself in New York City. Well, this is a little different because it is the federal government. That was state. This is federal, so therefore kind of a bigger deal. And the charges here stem from, well, espionage. I mean, that's a pretty serious thing to be leveling on a former president of the United States. But like I said, there are new polls, and we're going to get to those momentarily, because what they're sort of showing you here in this polling data is that, wow, it's like Donald Trump has kind of made a Teflon. It actually hasn't hurt him one single bit. In fact, it's actually helping him right now. And you compare and contrast where he is versus, say, Ron DeSantis, and he continues to gain steam with the latest poll coming to us via CBS and now showing Donald Trump above 60%. I mean, that is a very, very high level, indicating that, again, he is going to be the nominee for the GOP unless they find some kind of loophole to take him down. And that indeed becomes the question. I think that's why you're actually seeing more and more people beginning to throw their hat in the ring. That's why maybe we saw Chris Christie come in there because he thought, okay, well, now there's an opening for me. Ron DeSantis, he's sort of the presumptive guy, right? Like he's the number two there. Well, does he continue to pick up momentum if, in fact, Donald Trump moves to the side? Right now, we're not seeing that. Donald Trump has every card stacked against him, at least from, you know, the feds coming in and saying enough is enough. And yet he continues to rise in the polls, perhaps because a lot of people that were conservatives that maybe were like, okay, like I'm sick of this. Like I just can't deal with the drama. And they're like, wait a second, what exactly is going on? And they're comparing, for example, what is going on with Donald Trump to what happened with Hillary Clinton. And they don't like what they see. Because they're saying, why is it that James Comey would not go after Hillary Clinton, and yet he's willing to go after Donald Trump? Alan Dershowitz, who was just on the show the other day, had a very good piece, very interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal today. Now, Alan Dershowitz has been a pretty big supporter of Donald Trump. In fact, going so far as on this show to say that the former president's constitutional rights had really been trampled on. Yet when he saw this indictment, he admitted full on, he said, look, this is much stronger than I would have thought. This indictment is more than, it's better than I would have thought. All that said, it's still a big deal to indict a former president. This is historic. And so his question, and he writes in the Wall Street Journal, was whether or not this really justified the indictment. How can you justify an indictment of the leading candidate to challenge the president in next year's election? Alan Dershowitz from Harvard University writes, even with the recorded statements, he said, this one isn't nearly as strong as the one that led to President Richard Nixon's resignation in 1974. Nixon was almost certainly guilty of destroying evidence, bribing witnesses, and other acts of obstruction. Many of the charges in this case are matters of degree. Nor have prosecutors any evidence, he writes, that Mr. Trump's actions damaged national security more than those of Mr. Biden, Mr. Pence, and Mrs. Clinton. Don't forget, of course, they found those documents in, you know, the garage in Delaware, Biden's garage, right next to his Corvette. He kept telling us, right next to my Corvette. I kept it in the locked garage next to my Corvette. We're very proud of you, Joe Biden, that you worked this hard and you managed to get yourself a Corvette, which you keep locked up in the garage next to your classified papers. You see, the other issue there was that he was keeping them at his quote-unquote office, which was that place in D.C. that was put together by the University of Pennsylvania with some funding, interestingly enough, from China, because apparently, like, the money just kept pouring in when they announced that Biden was going to run this little think tank, and some of the documents were there as well. So obviously, this makes people kind of nervous. And then you got Trump's documents, which apparently were in the bathroom in Mar-a-Lago and in maybe a ballroom, and there were like 120 boxes. And so I think Dershowitz is making some very good points. In other words, what is the distinction? What is the difference? And will they be able to prove that? Again, it's a pretty high bar, because you know what? You guys are doing some really crazy stuff. You, Joe Biden, your administration is going after the guy who's going to be competing against you, running against you. And that just in and of itself feels really, really uncomfortable. He goes on to say, this is Alan Dershowitz, longtime professor at Harvard, by the way, a huge liberal. Like, this is not exactly a guy that would be voting for Trump. He's voted for Democrats his entire life, he told me. In fact, even in the last election, voted for Joe Biden. But he goes on to write, when an incumbent administration prosecutes the leading candidate against the president, it should have a case that is so compelling that it attracts the kind of bipartisan support that forced Nixon to resign. No such support is currently apparent, since many Republicans continue to be troubled by the targeting of Mr. Trump. Mr. Smith, he's referring, of course, to the prosecutor, will have to convince not only a Miami jury, but the American public on both sides of the partisan divide. And that is going to be tough to do, indeed. All right, as I promised, my friend Debbie D'Souza joining us right now live. Let me bring her into the conversation. It's so good to see you, Debbie. And I was saying to the listeners and to the viewers, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on today is not just to talk about what's going on in Venezuela, but given the symbolism of it all, I think as we see the former president of the United States, Debbie, about to be arraigned there in Miami, it feels to me as though it's getting a little, just a little Banana Republic-esque. And I know how familiar you and your family are with Venezuela and really the tragedy of that entire situation. And I was hoping you could speak to that. Do you personally see similarities between what is going on now here in the United States and what happened in Venezuela over the last 20 plus years?
Oh, yes, very much so. I've talked about this for many years, probably close to a decade, if not longer, that I see so many similarities between the left in Venezuela and what they do to their political enemies, to the opposition, and what happens here in America. You know, their hatred of fossil fuels, rigging elections, going after political opponents, incarcerating dissidents. I mean, it really is, unfortunately, too eerily familiar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about it, and you know, I always would say to myself, and you know, throughout my career, I've been like, okay, well, I can be really proud because I've spent time in Latin America and certainly done a lot of reporting on that. You know, my first real job was actually at Goldman Sachs, where we were trading Latin American debt, including Venezuela and Brazil, and I would think, and Argentina, which, you know, has been through multiple debt crises. So when I look at, like, okay, you know, we're dealing with a debt crisis, I'm like, this is like kind of feeling a little weird because, you know, I've certainly studied my share of debt crises and, you know, had to trade Argentine bonds that are coming out of these crises. And then I look at what's going on in Brazil, where you have Lula, right? I mean, Lula, who was the president of Brazil, then went to jail, just like, well, Dilma Rousseff, by the way, who was his VP and then became president in Brazil, went to jail. I mean, all of these people, like, it's like the MO, right? Like, you sign up to run for office in any of these countries and ultimately you're going to wind up in jail in some way, shape, or form. Like, they're going to find something. But then Lula came out of jail and he's president again. I'm like, look, I mean, we don't want to be that.
We don't want to be that, but that is exactly what we're becoming. And it has the similarities are, unfortunately, extremely similar when it comes to the Democrats and the socialists in Venezuela. There's a reason why Hugo Chavez loved Hillary Clinton, loved Bill Clinton, loved Obama, Biden. There's a reason, and I always tell my Venezuelan friends, why do you think they hate Republicans so much? Because they don't align with Republican values. They align with Democrat values. They align with the Democrat platform and policies and tactics. That's what they do. So it is not a surprise when we have someone like Maduro in Venezuela, who has been a dictator for 10 years. They have not had fair elections, free and fair elections in Venezuela in the last 20 plus years. But since Maduro has been there, it's become even worse. And, you know, I've shared with you before the fact that I have family in Venezuela. I have a very close cousin who I keep in contact with, who I'm trying to bring to America legally, but it's been really difficult to do that. You know, imagine that, the flood of...
No, I mean, and by the way, can I just say as an aside, that's what ticks me off about the whole thing, right? Like, we have people that could be so productive in our society that we should want to bring here. I remember Donald Trump saying in 2016 about how he wanted to have like the red carpet out, right? So that you bring people here who can, and not everybody has to have a PhD, for goodness sakes. I'm not even suggesting that. You know, we need people that want to work and work in so many different capacities. And if we could find a way to do this legally, right, we would be all better off. And yet they're flying people into Westchester County Airport at 3 a.m. You know, yeah. I'm like, you know, and it's being done. Well, they're getting across the border illegally and then flying them in. It's just, it's wild.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that flood of illegal immigrants from Venezuela, illegal aliens from Venezuela, is not the kind of Venezuelans that we want in America. These were the people that were expecting handouts in Venezuela. And when they didn't get them, guess where they want the handouts next? So they're coming to America to receive what they didn't get in Venezuela. And this is very bad. And unfortunately, we did drop the ball when it came to Venezuela and making sure that the legitimate president of Venezuela
was... Okay. This is exactly what actually Donald Trump... So, you know, he went out and did a few rallies, and we know he loves the rallies, and he's a bit of a performer, right? I think we can all agree on that. And I remember actually Bill Stein, who actually worked in his office there at the White House, once telling me he wants to get back out and do rallies. Like, it was almost like Reagan. I remember one of Reagan's top people telling me Reagan just needed to get out, right? Like he just needed to go and talk to people and do these rallies. Anyway, he did a few rallies over the weekend, but I was very intrigued. I will play this soundbite for you, Debbie, because he brought up Venezuela and he makes a very good point because his administration was so close. We actually thought at the time, remember that Juan Guaido, who was leading the opposition, actually stood a real shot at being able to become the president there. And then it all kind of disintegrated. But it would have actually meant cheaper oil for the U.S. because we would have had a democratic system in there, one that we could work with. They wouldn't have been hanging out with the Iranians like they are right now. Here's Donald Trump speaking over the weekend, and he specifically brought up Venezuela. Let's get your reaction on the other side.
How about we're buying oil from Venezuela? When I left, Venezuela was ready to collapse. We would have taken it over. We would have gotten all that oil. It would have been right next door. But now we're buying oil from Venezuela, so we're making a dictator very rich. Can you believe this? Nobody can believe it. You know where the oil, you know, their oil is garbage. It's horrible. The worst you can get, tar. It's like tar. And to refine it, you need special plants. And these people.
He's right. It is like tar, absolutely like tar. And to refine it, you do need the sort of benefit of American technology in there, which Hugo Chavez, he kicked all the U.S. and European oil companies out. I mean, we've still got Chevron there. But Debbie, you know, he had some pretty decent policy, I'm just going to say, like on the international front, on the domestic front, economically, like it just kind of had a common sense ring to it.
Oh, he did. He did. And he did. He's right. He came very close. In fact, my aunt, who was Venezuelan, who just passed away recently, loved him. She called him her big, beautiful blonde man. I mean, she just loved him. She would have loved to have seen him back in the White House. In fact, she told me this about a week before she passed away. She says, Debbie, I know he's going to come back to the White House. I know he's going to be president again. And I know he's going to save Venezuela. Those were her last words to me about Donald Trump. And this is the sentiment of a lot of people in Venezuela. They really counted on Donald Trump to get them out of the situation that they're in. But even to add a little bit more to what Trump said, not just about oil, but about our enemies. I mean, you know, the president of Iran, Raisi, was just there yesterday. And they signed, he and Maduro signed agreements to bring more boost more trade into Venezuela from $3 billion a year to $20 billion a year. And not only that, but they also want to do some more mining. And you know what they're after? They're after the enriched uranium that Iran seeks for nuclear weapons. And so this is, you know, it's opening up.
It's a big deal. And it's right here in our Western hemisphere. And I'm like, hello, has nobody heard of the Monroe Doctrine? Not to mention what we are learning. Now, the administration denies that there's any truth to this, but the Wall Street Journal came out with a pretty heavy-handed report saying that China is establishing a spy base in Cuba. We know that Cuba and Venezuela, they're like best friends. Chavez made sure of that. And, yes. You know, none of this is adding up in a very good way. To me, like, don't you want to keep the countries that could, you know, by the way, be rich in resources, don't you want to keep them as kind of your friend? I mean, we actually had a very big part in establishing this original success of Venezuela because we understood the strategic opportunity of having all the oil. And this was before they discovered the Orinoco region, right? We just knew that, okay, there's oil there. Like we want to be friends. And Venezuela benefited from that. They became the most successful economy with the highest standard of living in all of Latin America. So it was a good relationship until, of course, you say very interestingly, the what Chavez had in common with the socialists and the Democrats here today, until, of course, Chavez came in and started pointing the finger and kept saying it's because of those colonialists, those white Europeans and Americans that they came in and they stole this from you and it's rightly yours. And you know, it was sort of like a reparations conversation that he wanted to have with the people of Venezuela. And so he made sure that all those Europeans and Americans got out. He took everything from them and promised promised so much to the people, and none of that came through, of course. And well, it did for a little while because oil prices went up. And then, you know, when the actual oil market kicked in and he didn't have good oil because it was all that tar-like substance, he couldn't keep those, you know, those payments up, and he didn't have the right people in charge. And it just became a total mess. And it continues to be to the point where, you know, in some cases, people are starving in Venezuela. It's a shame.
He did steal the money as well. He became a billionaire. He died with a net worth of $2 billion. So he stole a lot of that money. And even, you know, even today, Maduro is not fixing infrastructure. Venezuela is falling apart at the seams. I mean, it is just, it's horrific what's happening down there. People are starving. And because of that, they're coming to America. And I just wish people would understand that this is one group of people that we could keep at bay if we had helped Venezuela. So I just kind of wanted to let you know that, you know, the very real, fallout of illegal immigration is partly due to the fact that Venezuela collapsed. And so we have some, in fact, the majority of the people coming over illegally are from Venezuela. And it's all of the people that were promised the goods and weren't given the goods.
Yes.
And now
that
speak of them. So,
and forgive me if people see me looking off camera, I'm trying to just pull up some of the comments because our viewers here on the Trish Regan channel, this is a big surprise because they didn't know we were going to make the Venezuelan link here today, but they have lots to say and they're very, very passionate about this. And so they some of them are pointing out sort of all roads lead to Rome. And, you know, that's a very good point when you think about historically this situation we are in. William Cordes joining us again. Everybody's very excited to see you. Michael Donald's back here again. Thank you to everybody tuning in, and you can put your questions there for Debbie or for me or just your comments. I know so many of you are commenting together, and I just wanted to acknowledge that. But again, back to Debbie here, because the similarities I think are pretty striking. But you know what, Debbie, I'm looking at this new poll from CBS and I'm just amazed, because it's like nothing is going to get Donald Trump when it comes to the people and to the base. And you might think that some Republicans are kind of like worn out. They're exhausted. It's so much drama. Nobody wants all this drama, drama, drama. And yet, what do we see? Every poll suggests that the more they go after Donald Trump, the more conservatives rally and they say, nuh-uh, like not happening. And granted, you know, I look at it and I don't entirely understand why he just didn't give over the boxes. I mean, I think he was annoyed, but, you know, he's a special personality. I like him, but definitely a very special personality. And a lot of people would have said, okay, you know, here you go. And then hopefully diffused the situation. He dug in his heels. He wouldn't give over the boxes like Pence did or Biden did. And that gave the government more ammunition, which they are so happy to use. Yeah. And so now they have this ammunition. But Alan Dershowitz, I was just talking with the listeners before you came on the show about the op-ed that he published today saying, sure, you know, okay, maybe you have this ammunition, but the standard's really kind of high. It's pretty darn high. And there's a reason that Comey didn't move forward with prosecution against Hillary Clinton. I'm also going to say something else, because I had spoken actually indeed with Donald Trump on and off record about this, about Hillary Clinton. You know, he didn't move forward either with his Justice Department to try and prosecute Hillary Clinton. And part of that was because he also saw how tainted that would be, right? Like, he knew that we didn't want to be Venezuela or Brazil or Argentina, and we didn't want to seem as though we were so litigious. Like, look, you know, at some point it's like move on. And yet now they're doing it to him.
Yeah. They're afraid of him. They don't want him back in the White House. They're going to do everything they can to keep him away. And yes, very banana republic style, very Venezuelan style. This is what they do. In fact, my friend Maria Corina Machado, who is running for president in Venezuela, there will be an election in 2024, just like ours. They're trying to make these elections free and fair, although she does have a really tough road ahead, because the opposition is not allowed to observe in these elections. And if you can't observe the elections, how do you know that they're legitimate? So she's running.
What about Jimmy Carter's team? Didn't he have like the Jimmy Carter Institute or something down there?
It was there, but they, I think they actually hid the truth from the Venezuelan people. There was fraud in Venezuela. And unfortunately, like anywhere else in the, and I'm not going to say exactly
no,
where.
No, we got to be careful. Although YouTube has like loosened their rules, but you got to be, here's what I would just say on that topic. And I firmly believe this. You know what? If the Democrats are organized enough that they're going to go into every nursing home or they're going to go into every, you know, every possible nook and cranny that they can find a vote, I would just suggest that the Republicans also get themselves very organized, because two can play at that game. And I don't mean to call it a game, but look, I mean, if every vote counts and you've got a whole bunch of votes, you know, here, there, and everywhere, why aren't you out there getting every single one, including, yes, the people at the nursing homes or wherever else? I mean, sure, getting out the vote is so important. And if you're going to have absentee ballots, then okay, you recognize these are the rules of the road. So let's play within the rules and make sure that we get all the votes we possibly can.
Right. Or the churches. I mean, Trish, think of all the churches that could do a voter drive and get their parishioners to vote. And, you know, that would be amazing if they would do that. But I think that our conservative Christian churches don't want to do politics in church. They don't want to preach from the pulpit on politics. And unfortunately, they do. The left does. And we don't. So why not? Let's do that.
Interesting. I got to get myself to like a really leftist church just to hear it and observe. Yeah. I do think that, you know, we love our church and we go to church and, you know, I don't necessarily want to hear politics at church though. No. That's my one time on Sunday to kind of get away from it all and just be more spiritual and have an appreciation for God and a system of values that I understand like both sides of that for sure. And I think it's manipulative to try and use religion in too many of these liberal churches that are doing that. But anyway, I'll leave that aside for a second and just back to this poll. Let me go through the actual results with people because that's what we titled the show. So I do actually want to pull this up and show everybody. I find it rather incredible that it's like nothing can take him down. It just continues to show that I think Americans don't trust the system. And you know what, Debbie, as we discuss Venezuela and as I pull up this poll, I'll let you comment on that because that is my biggest fear here. When you don't trust the institutions themselves, then you've got a real problem. But Debbie, they've given us absolutely no reason to trust them. Let's be honest. I mean, think about the 51 spies, right? The John Brennan and Mike Morrell, the former deputy head of the CIA, coming out and trying to tell us that Hunter Biden laptop was nothing but a bunch of misinformation, when in fact it was their letter to Politico, which, by the way, shut everybody's Twitter accounts down and you name it, that was the misinformation. I mean, what are we supposed to think when they so blatantly lie to us?
Right. It's a two-tiered system. It's a two-tiered system, just like it is in Venezuela. I mean, think about it. Look at what is now discovered that Biden did. And is anyone talking about that? I mean, he essentially committed espionage or even treason.
Well, they can prove that out. And I want to, again, just be cautious. I mean, only because, and I will tell you this, like, look, they moved forward with that whole Trump dossier thing, which was a bunch of total garbage. And so what I would say is, okay, they've got this source, right? This the FBI. And just to back up for a second, anybody who's joining us, we're talking with Debbie D'Souza. Debbie D'Souza, my very good friend. She happens to be the wife of, you know, Dinesh D'Souza, of course. And the two of them have just reported on some tremendous issues over the last several years with some wonderful, wonderful documentaries. And Debbie, I think you occasionally go on your husband's show as well. So you can catch her there on the Dinesh D'Souza show for sure. I know she has a big hand in all the production as well in the editorial there. Debbie D'Souza, who has family in Venezuela and has been very passionate about making sure the United States of America does not become Venezuela. Maria Machado, you mentioned your good friend is running for president. I like Maria Machado a whole lot. She has appeared on this show at various times over the years. Tell me what it is that Maria Machado could actually do to help the United States of America and simultaneously help Venezuela.
Well, for one, she's ahead in the polls for whatever that's worth in Venezuela. So this is really good news because no opposition member has ever been ahead in the polls in Venezuela. And so this is really encouraging for her. She feels like she has a shot. Now, she has a shot if the election is fair and if she can actually see the process, right? But if she were to win in Venezuela, things would change dramatically. I mean, they would really change overnight, I think. Number one, we would probably be able to lift the sanctions because she would immediately stop the influx of the enemies coming into Venezuela and wreaking havoc there, right? So there would be direct talks with Venezuela. She would probably open up the oil production again and legitimate oil production. And again, she would stop Iran, she would stop Russia, she would stop China from taking over that country.
One thing I do want to point out, and this is interesting because people should know, Maduro is meeting with the Iranians right now. I've also heard from numerous sources that they've never seen the place crawling with so many Russians. There's just Russians everywhere. And people should understand that part of the reason for that is, and not to get too complicated, but you know, this is kind of my background, sovereign debt markets. We have set up a system, our Treasury Department has, and Biden has allowed this, such that Americans cannot buy what's called debt instruments in PDVSA or any sovereign debt out of Venezuela in what's known as the secondary market. And so it's like anything, you know, like you go up and buy a mortgage for your house and you get this debt instrument, the bank issues it, and then all of a sudden there's a secondary market where they trade it. You think, oh, my mortgage is with Bank of America, but actually your mortgage gets traded over and over again. And that's what's called the secondary market. So same thing happens, like if PDVSA, which is the main oil company down there, wants to issue bonds, and they have tons of bonds outstanding, they say, okay, well, then they're traded in this secondary market. Well, as you can imagine, they're trading for extremely little right now, like nothing, like Zippo, like these are dirt cheap. But Americans right. can't buy them. You can hold on to your Venezuelan bonds, but you can't buy them. So you can only sell them. Well, who do you sell them to? They're all getting sold to the Russians. And so the Russians and the Iranians and the Chinese get to go buy up all this debt in a major oil company or uranium mine, as you just mentioned, for literally nothing, which gives them a seat at the table, which means they are now running the show because we've got a bunch of rocket scientists apparently there in Biden's administration figuring that one out. I mean, give me a break.
Right, right. And so, yeah, so I think that Maria Corina would absolutely cut that. She would probably also invest in the infrastructure in Venezuela, help, you know, the grid system, which is like mossed over. People get rolling blackouts on a daily basis. I mean, my aunt would WhatsApp me, Debbie, we don't have electricity. You know, we have it for like 2 hours a day. I mean, things like that, just horrific. You know, the Bolivar is worth nothing. It people throw it in the trash can. So again, it would be a revival of the Venezuelan economy if Maria Corina were to win. And so Dinesh and I are vowing to help her with her election. You know, it's,
by the way,
very...
I should also point out she's educated in part in the U.S. I believe she did some of her work at Yale. Yes. She is one smart cookie. And the other thing I've always admired about Maria is that she is fearless. And she's... I mean fearless because she's been followed all around. They have, you know, Maduro's quote unquote spies are always watching her. It's not easy.
He won't let her leave the country. She can't leave Venezuela. And she can't go by plane. She can't fly to all of these places. So she has to go in a little caravan to all of these towns in Venezuela where she meets with people. And there's photos of her meeting with all kinds of people. You know, Maria Corina was, I guess, back in the day, she was upper middle class, now probably middle class because everybody in Venezuela took a big hit. Sure. But she can deal with people that are extremely poor, just like she can with anybody. I mean, she reminds me a lot of Donald Trump. You know, he might be a billionaire, but he can talk to you know, blue collar people and
poor. Oh, he totally can. He can do that better than anyone. Yeah. I've seen. It was actually, he had more money than Mitt Romney when he ran, but he came across as just much more a man of the people. The other thing I liked about him was that he kind of celebrated his wealth, which, by the way, why shouldn't you? I mean, yeah, you know, exactly. Like if you make it, you make it. Like, why be ashamed?
And he corrects you if you say you know, you're $2 billion. Oh, wait a minute. No. I have $4 billion, not two.
Oh,
four.
Yeah.
So anyway, but Maria Corina is very much that way. She's a woman of the people. They love her everywhere she goes, but she does have to travel by car because she cannot fly. Maduro has put her on the do not fly list and, you know, she can't leave. So it's very bad. This man should be in prison, Maduro. You know, it's going to have to be an election that is a legitimate election so that they can finally get rid of the dictator that he has been for over 10 years.
I should say, because we're getting some breaking news into us right now. Donald Trump is just arriving there at the Miami courthouse, surrendering to charges that he held on to those classified documents, as AP words it, that he, quote, hoarded classified documents. This is, again, a historic moment here in the United States of America. Never before has a president of the United States been criminally indicted with federal charges, including espionage here. Donald Trump arriving at the courthouse for his arraignment, surrendering effectively. I wonder now, you've probably been following Debbie D'Souza. We're speaking with Debbie D'Souza. She's happens to be the wife of Dinesh D'Souza, and she's very involved in the production of his show, often appearing, of course, as a guest there as well. Having a background, I should point out, in Venezuela and knowing the history of that country very well, it comes in at an interesting time today as we consider what's happening here for the first time in the United States of America, a former president being arraigned at a courthouse. The similarities, of course, to Banana Republic are pretty staggering, given that the current administration is choosing to go after their rival. Now, whether or not he should have, you know, given them back, or I would have given them back, you know, I can't explain that one, but I will say this, it is quite something to be leveling this indictment, this criminal indictment. This is a historic move against a former president of the United States. And I guess my biggest concern in all this, Debbie, is that it's more to come. It's not just going to be Donald Trump. If I were Joe Biden right now, I'd be pretty worried, because if the Republicans get back in office, then it's going to be game over for him too. You mentioned, and I forgive me, I interrupted you on that. You mentioned the money that allegedly was given to Hunter Biden and to Joe Biden. Again, alleged money. And I'm cautious because I know what they did with the whole Trump dossier thing. But this is according to one document that the FBI has. They interviewed a source who told them, apparently, according to Comer and according to Grassley, there are recordings,
right,
numerous recordings of both Joe Biden and Hunter Biden in this discussion about the alleged bribe that might have been to the tune of $10 million, five for Hunter, five potentially, allegedly, for Joe Biden. These are some pretty massive accusations, and I actually, in my own personal view would consider them a little worse than holding on to the documents. But if they prove this one out, Debbie, you understand what's happening? Like, we are going down a really dangerous path here. And the sort of faith in all institutions, all politicians will be eroded, much like they have, frankly, in Venezuela.
Right. Well, you know, the irony of that is that Donald Trump was impeached the first time, impeached because he was actually talking about that very thing that was supposedly not even true. And now it's coming out that it very well could be true. So he was impeached over that. So it's a little interesting to me that it's come full circle this way. But, you know, I don't know, Trish, I don't know if Republicans are cut out of the same cloth as Democrats. And I don't know that we would actually go, start the impeachment process or any of those things.
I know. Because you know what? He had the chance to do that. Donald Trump could have gone after Hillary Clinton some more. And he didn't. Even he, right? Like, was like, okay, well, that's like one step too many.
But I really think that if anything is worth impeaching, and if anyone is worth impeaching over, it's over this. This, if true, as you say, alleged, but if true, this is horrific. I mean, it's really, really bad. And yes, what Trump supposedly did pales in comparison.
Again, if you're just joining us right now, we are getting word that the president, he has just arrived there at the Miami courthouse for his arraignment. It's a sad day. It's a historic day. We are speaking with none other than Debbie D'Souza, who is an expert on all things Venezuela. She has been very concerned about the country that she originally hails from and the deterioration, we should say, that we have seen over the last 22 years there in Venezuela. And the concern, of course, of Debbie's and mine, and perhaps many of you, is that if we continue down this path with a quasi-socialist team, frankly, that becomes extremely vigilant about making sure it's their way or the highway and nothing else is allowed, then we're going to wake up in two decades and we're going to find ourselves in a very similar situation. Venezuela having gone, ladies and gentlemen, from being the top per capita income place in all of Latin and South America to now one of the poorest, if not the poorest place in all of Latin America. Going back to the poll, as we began this discussion, I was talking about how these numbers keep showing improvement. We cited the CBS one, which shows Donald Trump now over 60%. And it's just amazing to me because Ron DeSantis is not breaking out like you would have thought. We can talk about that, Debbie, in a second. But here I am looking at this new one that just came out from Reuters Ipsos, and it finds that 81% of the GOP believes the charges stemming from Donald Trump's handling of classified documents, which he's being arraigned for right now in Miami after leaving the White House, were, quote, trumped up as he runs for the White House for the third time. 62% of respondents in this Reuters Ipsos poll, including 91% of Democrats, 35% of Republicans, said that it was believable that Trump illegally stored classified documents at his home in Florida, as alleged by prosecutors. However, they still don't feel like that is enough to go after a former president and throw him in jail. What's your take? Is he going to continue seeing support among the base?
I think he will. And you know, it'll especially be good if we actually see what the specific crimes were, because Dinesh read it. And in fact, in today's podcast, he talked about it, how one of them was just a letter from Obama. And it was just basically saying, you know, that North Korea was, you know, was a threat. Well, that's Captain Obvious. You know, that's not a secret. So I wonder how many of these letters or documents.
I wonder the same.
Secret, you know, are bad. Yeah. Or whatever. So I do think that they really went after him in a big way. And I think they're basically trying to get him out of the way is what they're trying to do. And you know what, if they tie his hands up like this, now he has vowed that he's still going to run, but I think they're just trying to make it really difficult for him to run.
And they want to make it difficult, right? But then I guess the process then becomes, if they continue galvanizing the GOP around Donald Trump and they're not able to cut them all together, then do they find themselves back in a situation much like 2016? I mean, I kept saying during the whole thing, I'm like, okay, you know, you all think that this is funny. You all think that there's no way he could ever possibly win. And in fact, he did win. So careful what you wish for, Democrats. They're right. Terrified that Ron DeSantis could be the nominee. And let me just point out that they are so terrified, they've actually started going after him quite aggressively. If you dare to ever watch The View, I mean, they can barely even say his name. And then on the Tony Awards, which, by the way, I cannot stand these award shows, so I don't watch them, but I noticed what one of these actresses had to say about the governor of her home state of Florida, comparing him. Debbie, this is bad. Like, it just makes me angry because I'm like, do you guys have no appreciation for history, no sensitivity to what people in the Holocaust actually went through? This is Danae Benton at the Tony Awards talking about Governor Ron DeSantis because they're terrified he could be next.
And while I am certain that the current Grand Wizard, Governor of my home state of Florida will be changing.
You see that? And everybody's cheering. They love that. So they're like, I think it's important to note that because it's not just Trump. Remember, they did this to Bush. He was so hateful. He was racist. Right. I mean, some of the worst things you can possibly say about somebody, by the way. They said the same thing about Mitt Romney. They said the same thing about Trump. This is their MO. And now, just to like hedge the bets, just in case Donald Trump gets taken out, it winds up being DeSantis, they're making sure they're telling the world really scary things. I mean, comparing him to KKK, I'm sorry, like, enough already, guys. Like, how is it that the left has managed to take that narrative? I look at the Republicans, and I actually see a very American sense of meritocracy. If you work hard, you can live the American dream. They're telling us the opposite on the left.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, when they own all of the you know, megaphones of information, like, you know, academia and Hollywood and even comedy and all of that, you know, the news, the media, they are able to kind of paint a narrative where people that don't know, and Trish, there are a lot of people out there that absolutely have no clue what's going on. I mean, they don't even know who the vice president is. Okay, they have no idea. So they listen to.
Wish I could forget sometimes too.
No, same here. Actually, I have forgotten. But anyway, so
until you hear her laugh.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, when you hear this constantly that we're racist, that we're Nazis, that we're fascists. That's what people believe. They actually believe it. And you know, by the way, they have no idea what a fascist is. When they say it, they actually believe that a Republican is a fascist when they absolutely don't even know what the definition of fascism is. So anyway,
by the way, are they not becoming that? When they shut down the side, I mean, like at some point you're so left, you're like so right. You know, totalitarianism and fascism are kind of sort of the same thing at some point, right? Because it's top-down control.
Exactly. But you know, the funny thing is, and this is actually comical, is that they say that Trump was a dictator, right? And I say to myself, man, if he was a dictator, he really sucked at it. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine not only losing an election, because usually you control the elections if you're a dictator, right? But he also is being targeted. Well, you know, the dictator doesn't really get targeted. He does the targeting. So anyway, if he was a dictator, he was the worst dictator in history.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, if he was a dictator, and I've said this before, Jim Acosta would not have been able to ask the questions that he was asking.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely.
You know, he wouldn't have been allowed in the room. You know what's frightening is that the other side pretends that they're all, you know, peace and love and, you know, kumbaya and let's hold hands and we're all about democracy. And yet they're the ones that are shutting people down. They are the ones that insisted anybody who talked about the Hunter Biden laptop was persona non grata. They are the ones that are so about cancel culture. Everybody's surprised right now as we look at Target, for example, which has just plummeted in value. Its market cap has just fallen off a ledge because, you know, moms are like, okay, you guys are pushing it a little bit too far. I mean, they have other problems as well. Yeah. We just had Jerry Storch on the other day, who's the former vice chairman of Target. And he's like, look, they got theft problems. They've got messy aisles. They have an inventory disaster. It all kind of reeks of a management problem, frankly, over there at Target. But then they went ahead and did this with the little swimsuit things where they're called Tuck It for anybody who needs to know more. Sorry, it's early in the day to be talking about that. But anyway, moms are like, sorry, you know, not shopping there anymore. And the same thing, of course, we know with Bud Light, where it's almost like there's this sense that we can control it all and we can control the people. We'll put our embeds over there in this marketing department and that marketing department. And people are like, no. I'm sorry, like, had enough. I don't need this stuff shoved down my throat, quite literally. I don't need to drink it. I don't need to drink Bud Light. I don't need to shop at Target. Is there a political extraction that you can make from that information? I mean, again, as we on this historic day watch Donald Trump marching in there to be arraigned in Miami, what are the people telling us here when they're not going to shop? It's their own form of, if you would, cancel culture, I guess, which, you know, the right has never really embraced, not to the extent the left has, but they're voting with their wallets.
Yeah, well, I hope it continues. I mean, I really do. I hope that conservatives are able to say enough is enough. I mean, and not just with buying things, you know, that are shoved in our face, but social media platforms. I mean, the fact that you can't say anything about COVID, you can't say anything about climate change, you can't say anything about elections, you can't say anything about anything, that goes against their narrative. Because if you notice, the censorship is only on one side. It's not on their side. They can say pretty much anything they want and get away with it. We cannot. And so I hope that stops. Now, you know, Elon Musk has done a lot to kind of loosen up Twitter a little bit. But hey, you know, there are other social media platforms that still shut you down and still take you off air. So, you know, I would like to see all that change.
For sure. No, it has to change. And I guess my question is, are we seeing evidence that it's really beginning to? Are you confident in that?
Well, you know, like I said, the Budweiser, the Bud Light and the Target are good. And I don't know if you saw, it was probably in the news yesterday or this morning about even Starbucks kind of like taking LGBTQ things off their shelves, because of pressure. So we'll see if this continues. I hope it does.
No, I do hope it does too, in that I think that people need to be able to have more of a say in all of this. I think that the American people need to be heard, and, you know, they're just going too far. I'm trying to see if I can pull up some of this video that's coming to us right now. This is courtesy of the Epic Times, and these are protesters right now that are outside in Miami, of course, as the former president of the United States is preparing to, he's there to be arraigned. And look, it looks very, very peaceful to me, Debbie. Curious to get your thoughts, any reaction to this? It's so far so good, I would say.
So far so good. And, you know, in a way, I mean, this is pretty interesting that he's going to have the trial there in Miami, because I think that he's got a lot of support in Miami, a lot. So it's going to be really difficult to get 12 jurors to convict him. I really think that it just won't happen. So we'll see. I mean, that's, if it goes that far, if the judge doesn't throw out the charges altogether, we'll see.
Well, I do think that Miami is a good place. Now, everybody's livid because of this particular judge that's looking at all this, and she had been a Trump appointment. And of course, she's facing all kinds of criticism. I would only point out that in New York, you kind of had the opposite situation, right?
Absolutely.
What's your take on that? I mean, is that just to be expected that we're going to see everybody flipping out about this judge because she was a Trump appointment?
Yes, I think they will flip out about it. But it's okay. I mean, I think it's it's fine that she, because, you know, the thing about conservative judges typically that are appointed by, you know, a Republican president, usually they go by the Constitution. They're not activist judges, unlike their judges who are, and who are on the bench to do exactly that, to act, you know, to be activists. And I think that this judge will follow the law and follow the Constitution.
Well, so, look, that's what we need. And I think that the hope is anyway, that in fact, well, I suspect that Smith, who's prosecuting this case, I mean, people have said like, he could have brought this anywhere. Why did he choose Miami? He's hoping that a jury there in Miami, the judge in Miami, will help take some of the stink off of this, because if they say, okay, you know, the former president is going to jail, if he could get, you know, jailed for this, well, then that would be quite something in and of itself. Your take on that? I'm just going to pull up some video we have coming into us right now of the president arriving there in Florida for the arraignment. But, you know, what's the methodology, do you think, if any, right now? I mean, Smith is, he was told to do this, right? Like, he's out there trying to do his job.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I really think that Miami is not going to go for it. I really do. I mean, you know, Dade County went red. So I think that had it been in D.C. or New York, we'd be a little bit more hesitant.
Okay. And again, as I said, we have some video coming into us right now of the former president of the United States there. You can see his car approaching. This is just breaking, of course, a historic day, a sad day. I'm here with Debbie D'Souza. She is one of the, can I call you the producer? You're also the wife of Dinesh D'Souza, but one of the producers, of course, on his program. And she has been very outspoken on some of the challenges, of course, that we are facing in this country. And having hailed originally from Venezuela, Debbie knows just how rough it can really get, which this is what it feels like.
Going after your political opponent, shutting them down, this is what they do. This is exactly what they do. It's no different. And, you know, it's even worse here because we claim to be a free country. We claim not to be this. And yet look at what's happening. I don't see how anybody that came from Venezuela can't see it either. I mean, it's so obvious.
So back to Venezuela, because I'm just amazed at how we've managed to mess that one up. When did it really start going wrong? I remember, what was it? Maybe 1999. And I was at Goldman Sachs, and I had been put on the emerging markets desk, where one of the bonds, we traded a number of Venezuelan bonds. But we were watching, of course, very carefully, because Chavez had just come into power. And I remember our view, the consensus was, which was so wrong, by the way, oh, you know, maybe it won't be that bad. Lula's the one we're worried about. You know, he's the socialist. Lula actually, it was amazing, actually put in a ton of economic reforms that were far more in line with a capitalist system. And actually his economy did well for a little while as a result of it. But Chavez were like, okay, like, we think he's going to be awful. I remember a whole team of bankers were going down from Goldman to Caracas because they wanted to meet with, and Hugo Chavez completely blew them off. I mean, so I was helping with the research, you know, so everybody would be prepared, totally blew them off. And it's much like when I tried to do an interview with him down there, I was blown off over and over again. Mañana, mañana, mañana. I never did get an interview with him, although I did hear him speak a lot. And what I heard when he spoke, Debbie, over and over and over again, was this, let's divide. Divide, 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 and conquer. It's those awful white American and Europeans that have ruined your life. And there was this really kind of like scary when you think about it, especially in light of everything that's happening now. And it's like straight out of the Venezuelan playbook when I see what Biden and company are trying to do.
Yeah. Well, he, you know, first of all, Hugo Chavez lied when he ran for president. He said he was not a socialist. He said he was not going
That's
to
That's why
socialize.
Goldman was like, oh, it'll be okay.
Yeah, not only that, but he convinced a lot of people of it. So that very first election, when he won the presidential election in 1999, my grandparents voted for him, even though I told them that I thought he was up to no good. And I had done a little research and found that he was very close to the Castro brothers in Cuba. I knew that there could be nothing good coming out of that. And so I told them, please be very cautious about this man. I don't think he is who he says he is. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, he came in. He even said that if in 5 years, he wasn't the president that everybody thought he was going to be, that he would be happy to step down. So what happened? In 2004, Maria Corina Machado, who was at the time a assemblywoman at the time, National Assembly, she decided to do a referendum to get him out. And in 2004, they tried to get him out that way. And that was, unfortunately, the beginning.
Was that the alleged coup?
It was.
Okay. I think we did have a little background noise in that one. We wanted him gone, right? Like we wanted. And then he used that to his advantage. And that was when, is that when he stacked the court?
Yeah, he did. He stacked the court soon after that. That was pretty much, people knew that he was going to be a dictator for life. And he would have been had he not died in 2013. But, you know, he would have been. Yeah.
So this is interesting. Maria has got a shot here. And you point to the polls. And so as long as they have true and fair elections, which, you know, is obviously debatable in Venezuela, then she's got a shot at winning. One of the most important things, though, I would imagine for her and for anyone in Venezuela, is to make sure that they get people out to vote, right? Because the mistrust in institutions is so severe that a lot of people are like, forget about it. They throw their hands up and they don't go to vote. I mean, it's what I worry about in our own country, where people feel like, okay, I don't have a say anymore, and they just say to heck with it. And they're not incentivized because their frustration level is so significant. How do we make sure that does? I guess it's, we've got to do whatever we can to really shore up the whole election process without going, you know, too deep into that. We got to save that for locals, I think. We'll have to continue that conversation over there. But we'll. But you know what, Adam? We really have to. You know, people have to believe in the system, which is hard right now.
They do, and they did lose hope in Venezuela. I mean, you know, one election after another, after another, after another, they were like, what's the point in going to vote? You know, in 2013, when Capriles, he was Enrique Capriles, who ran against Hugo Chavez at the time, he had a lot of support, and people really thought that he was going to pull it off. And then he loses that election. People were like, you know what? I give up. I'm just not going to go vote. I just refuse to be a part of that system that is corrupt and just is useless. And so that's what's happened in Venezuela. They don't really even need to cheat anymore, because the only people that vote are the people that know that their party is going to win, right? That the socialists are going
to
win.
Well, and they also, by the way, have to, right? Like, if you want to continue getting your food stamps or your you know, cheap rent,
yes,
they have to go and vote. And they know, and this is very weird, but they know, for example, in an apartment building or an apartment complex that's a government-sponsored apartment complex, they know if 100% of the building has voted for Maduro or not. And so as I understand it, there's a lot of pressure from the community. And it's like, if you deviate, then you're in trouble, which is, again, what we worry about here, right? Like, if you have an opinion that is different from everyone else, for example, if you dare to say that, gosh, maybe it's not fair that Austin Killips, who was born a man and transitioned and is now competing in bike races against women and winning by a country mile of 5 minutes. Maybe that's not fair. I'll show everybody the video. It's real quick.
Nashville champion in the house. It's all Austin.
Now, if you dare, Debbie, to say that that is like maybe not fair, somehow you're the problem. And Joe Biden is making that very clear in a speech just yesterday. I want to play this clip for you and I want your reaction. Again, just knowing how you can manipulate these social issues all in the name of freedom and yet simultaneously be hurting a group of people. In this case, I would argue female athletes that have been born female, all in the name of, okay, this is what is just and right. Here is the President of the United States on this issue just yesterday.
You know, when families across the country face excruciating decisions to relocate to a different state to protect their child from dangerous anti-LGBTQ laws, we have to act. We have to act as a nation. We need to push back against the hundreds of callous and cynical bills and laws introduced in states targeting transgender children, terrifying families, and criminalizing doctors and nurses. These bills.
So he's going on and making it quite clear that, this is dangerous stuff that parents are sort of speaking up and saying, hey, maybe I don't want the biologically born boy changing and showering in the locker room with my daughter. Maybe I don't want my daughter having to compete against biologically, but, you know, again, taking a social issue, driving a wedge, much like Hugo Chavez did with the people of Venezuela. I mean, I think this one is a harder reach. I'll just be honest, because you're talking about like 0.06% of the population, but again, they're trying.
Yeah, no. And they've tried with everything. I mean, listen, they've tried with ethnicity, with race, with money. I mean, this is exactly what Hugo Chavez did. You know, he toppled the Christopher Columbus statue because he was a,
he was a colonialist, right?
Colonialist, yes. And not to mention, even the founding fathers of Venezuela were white colonialists. You know, so yes, he tries to divide a country. He divided the country of Venezuela. And when I was in Venezuela, when I was a child in Venezuela, I didn't even like notice when people were dark or white or whatever. We were all just Venezuelan, and everybody was extremely patriotic until Hugo Chavez came along and decided that that just wasn't the way it was going to be, and that he was going to divide people, not just socioeconomically, but racially. So I'm sure had he been alive today, he would have done the same thing with the trans issue.
It's just amazing, though, how they take these and it's like divide, divide, divide. And I feel very similar to you. I mean, I just feel like up until, you know, a couple years ago, it wasn't really a factor to the way it is today. I mean, granted, and I'm not suggesting that Black Americans don't have challenges, and I'm not trying to say that racism doesn't exist in America, because clearly there's pockets where it certainly does. But I would say, you know what? And I have a lot of friends from Nigeria, actually, that have come here, enormous success stories, just enormous success. And the baggage that we leave a lot of African-American kids and students with in this country is pretty extraordinary, because you'll meet people that grew up in other places that don't have that kind of hangover and don't feel second class in any way. They're coming here to America to succeed and to get ahead. And that's what this country has always offered and promised. And when you start peeling that back and say, okay, now we have to give you reparations because of something that happened hundreds of years ago, then you start actually, I mean, to me, that's sort of discriminatory in and of itself, to suggest that you can't get ahead in America because of the color of your skin.
It is. And in a way, I mean, it makes for resentment that wasn't there before. So, you know, it's almost like poking the bear. I mean, they really are, but it's just a shame. And I think it's every time they do something, it's usually for some other reason. And basically, I think it's just to get a base of voters that keep them in power.
Yeah,
forever.
I mean, Joe Biden didn't used to be like this, right? Like, I mean, this is not the Joe Biden that literally, Debbie, oh my gosh, he was running when I was a kid. I actually heard him speak in New Hampshire when I was a kid, like a really little kid. Like, he's been running forever, right? But this is a very different Joe Biden now than what we used to hear.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's been in politics for like 4 or 5 decades. It's mm-hmm. it's just crazy. He has definitely changed his rhetoric for sure. He's caving to the left, to the far left, not even just the left, but the far left. And he's becoming just like Hugo Chavez, you know, and so I don't really see much of a difference.
I'm showing viewers the video that just came in of Donald Trump's SUV there pulling up as he is arraigned, a historic day in America, the president of the United States for the first time being indicted, 38 counts, by the way, federal indictment, including espionage, pretty, pretty bad, horrendous stuff in just every way, shape, and form, and the similarities between places like Venezuela, where Debbie is from originally, and the United States of America, they are growing. As we continue to watch this story, I don't want to take your entire day, Debbie, but I would just say, again, let me play some sound for the viewers. If you're just joining us, as we said, historic day, Donald Trump, nonetheless, pulling ahead and ahead and ahead in the polls. He just spoke over the weekend. I'd like Debbie's reaction again to this, because he made the point that things could have been a whole lot better in a whole lot of places, Venezuela included, had they just followed his policies, had his foreign policy, some of his domestic policies taken root. And this is when he talks about Make America Great Again. This is what he's trying to get back to. There's an unfinished job, shall we say, in Venezuela that could have been beneficial for the Venezuelans, for the Americans, for, frankly, the world. Here he is over the weekend. We'll get Debbie's reaction.
How about we're buying oil from Venezuela? When I left, Venezuela was ready to collapse. We would have taken it over. We would have gotten all that oil. It would have been right next door. But now we're buying oil from Venezuela, so we're making a dictator very rich. Can you believe this? Nobody can believe it. You know where the oil, you know, their oil is garbage. It's horrible. The worst you can get, tar. It's like tar. And to refine it, you need special plants. And these people.
Yeah, so he's right in so many respects on that one. Debbie, if you have, dare I say, a Donald Trump back in office, if you had a Maria Corina Machado there who could work alongside him as a partner, what would it mean for Venezuela? What would it mean for the United States?
Well, it would, for Venezuela, it would be amazing. I mean, they would probably, it may take a while, but they would probably restore the Venezuela that I was born in and that I grew up in, where there is freedom of speech, where they do follow the Constitution, and where they have, opportunities, job opportunities, economic opportunities. I would see Venezuela doing that and being that. For America, it would be having an ally very close by, and making sure that our enemies don't line themselves up in Central, South, and even the Caribbean, so that they are not only spying on us, but, you know, potentially could launch nuclear weapons.
Oh, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Like, protect yourself. Protect your hemisphere. Do not let the Iranians, the Chinese, the Russians, like all your enemies, right in the backyard 2.5 hours from Miami. I'm sorry. It's just... It blows my mind. And I know everybody hates Maduro, and I get a lot of flack when I say this, but I'm even like, okay, Maduro, he's desperate. He needs us. He is being effectively forced into the open arms of the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, because we've totally cut him off. We've cut the country off. So, like, again, and this is, actually, this is what I did think the president did very well. He understood, President Trump understood how to use business and economics to accomplish your goals, right? Because here's the carrot, it's the money. And if you don't really enforce what you need and what you want through those business deals and arrangements, then you're going to wind up in a situation where, you know, nobody's benefiting, frankly. I mean, maybe the Iranians could benefit, but they're not going to have the money and the technological know-how that we have. And so it could just be such a better arrangement. Not to mention culturally, I think the Venezuelan people feel more aligned, frankly, with us than the Chinese or the Russians. And for us to just ignore that opportunity is, absolutely, in my estimation, a huge blunder by our State Department. But our State Department is making a lot of blunders, are they not, Debbie, right now? I mean, it's like one after another. And, you know, they led off with Afghanistan.
They are. And internally, I was told by somebody that's close to the State Department that it was the State Department that was giving Trump wrong information about Venezuela. So somebody there didn't want that alignment. And so, unfortunately, we dropped the ball on it.
Back up for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Why did they not want the alignment? Because they didn't. Oh, wait a second. I'm on to you. Because they didn't want Maduro to have any chance of success, or because they wanted, I mean, very interesting, because you could have, I think, with a little massaging, probably have come to some kind of agreement where Juan Guaido would have had a bigger role, maybe Maduro, maybe you would have worked towards a free and fair election. You could have had more influence there, right? But somebody, was it like all or nothing? We want somebody else there and we're not willing to compromise?
I'm not really sure what went wrong, to be honest. But I
missed opportunity.
It was a huge missed opportunity, huge. And now we're seeing an illegal immigration problem, partly because of it. So a lot of consequences because of
a lot of consequences indeed. All right. Well, let's hope that we do not continue on this path to becoming Venezuela. I think that, you know what, the right, the conservatives are going to have to really pull together full steam ahead in this country for sure to make sure that we are on the right path and that they take back the White House in 2024. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting time. Hopefully we can speak freely throughout it. Debbie D'Souza, I mean, everybody's going to go over and watch Dinesh's show. I love your husband. I'm a huge fan, yes, of him. He is absolutely brilliant. I always feel like whenever I listen to his podcast, I'm just like, oh, I feel like I'm, you know, listening to a brilliant college lecture, and college in the good sense, not like what it's become today. He's just a brilliant man, as are you, as a woman. And I know how much you add to that show. So I encourage everybody, make sure you go and subscribe to the D'Souzas. You can find their podcast, of course, on Apple Podcasts. And my good friend, Debbie, good to see you. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Good stuff. All right. Debbie D'Souza, everyone. She is just really, really just an incredible, incredible woman. And I'm glad that she was able to spend so much time with us today. Wasn't that outstanding? I want to go out to some of your comments again. Big, big deal today here. We haven't even talked about this very interesting development from a legal front. Evan Corcoran, who was the former attorney for Donald Trump, he is actually being used in this indictment and being used by the government effectively against his client. It's a very strange turn of events when you are not protecting client attorney privilege anymore. It's quite bizarre to me anyway, but that is the situation that we are now in. And they were able to get clearance there from the judge in order to actually be able to accomplish that. So just amazing to see. So Evan Corcoran, who was Donald Trump's lawyer throughout this ordeal with those boxes there at Mar-a-Lago, his testimony, or rather his notes, even worse, right? His notes that he was taking on the case, those are being used against Donald Trump. So a 38-count indictment, federal indictment, criminal indictment against a former president. As I said, we were just talking with Debbie D'Souza, who grew up in Venezuela, knows it well. And when we make these comparisons to the banana republics of the world, I'm not kidding. I mean, that is actually what we really need to fear. And you just have to say, as Alan Dershowitz did in the Wall Street Journal today, okay, this is not great, right? We don't want people making off with 120 boxes, and then we don't want them digging in their heels and saying, I'm not giving it over. It's not great. But is it enough to actually really sort of jeopardize the entire system, which is what we are seeing right now? I want to go again to the video coming to us from our friends here at Epoch Times. They were taking some video of everybody out there. Very, very peaceful situation thus far. And of course, we absolutely hope and pray it will continue that way. I can't imagine it being anything else. I do think that you're going to see just a peaceful gathering. I was actually in Palm Beach when he was first indicted, as you'll recall, indicted again against, the whole indictment with Alvin Bragg came about. And I passed by Mar-a-Lago. I was there just, on a little vacation with my family, incognito. And the timing was had a bit of irony in it. And there were, just a couple people outside showing support, but it was nothing crazy. And I do think, despite the reputation that the left has tried to throw on so many conservatives, for the most part, you have people that are just there trying to show their support. As I said, this coming in from epic times, and really just we're seeing a very peaceful group, and that's good. And we want that peace because, again, that's part of our society. When I think to what could be, that's terrifying. And nobody wants that, including, by the way, I should point out, I don't think Donald Trump wants that, even though they're accusing him of such. Apparently he was on a podcast the other day and said that people should protest. Well, what is protest? That's a protest, and that's a good protest. And good protesting, peaceful protesting, is really and truly what this country is about. And we want to encourage that, from here to Sunday, all of that, of course. Again, going back to what we've seen here in this indictment and the use, by the way, the use of this Corcoran, which is his former lawyer, effectively against him, I do find that rather peculiar. And I think a lot of Americans are going to say, wait a second, is that the new standard? Like, can you actually use client attorney privilege against someone? And so I'll go back to what Dershowitz is saying, because look, I'm no legal expert. I just have some gut instincts on these things. And my gut instinct tells me none of this is really adding up in a way that is of the level that you want to reduce our country to a bit. Now, no one's above the law, all right? Like, let me make that clear. And I thought we knew that with Hillary Clinton, but somehow we decided, again, in the interest of the country, that it was important. It was somehow important enough that the administration not go after a candidate for president. So he has declared his presidency, a candidate for presidency, and yet they're after him anyway. So I will again quote here from Alan Dershowitz, who I'll point out, by the way, thought that they were too aggressively going after Donald Trump, but after reading the indictment and the 38 counts, he thought that, by the way, it was a few too many. Like, you got to be really careful as a prosecutor. You want to come forward with the counts that matter, but not just like every count, right? Like, you've got to be somewhat cautious, because then the jury looks at it and said, all right, well, this is kind of petty. So how am I supposed to take the bigger one seriously? Nonetheless, he said it was a much stronger indictment than he would have thought. You've heard Jonathan Turley, a noted conservative legal scholar, making a similar point, saying that, look, if they're able to prove this stuff out, Donald Trump is going to be in hot water, that this is not looking good. This is a bad thing, again, for Trump, for the country. No one wants to underestimate that. But again, going back to the editorial in the Wall Street Journal from Alan Dershowitz, professor at Harvard University, just a tremendous legal scholar, he writes, when an incumbent administration prosecutes the leading candidate against the president, it should have a case that is so compelling that it attracts the kind of bipartisan support that forced Nixon to resign. No such support is currently apparent, since many Republicans continue to be troubled by the targeting of Mr. Trump. Mr. Smith will have to convince not only a Miami jury, but the American public on both sides of the partisan divide. So again, speaking to, it's not just the jury. You've got to convince an entire country that this was not politically motivated. And I think that that's going to be a really high bar. Again, we'll see. We don't know the full extent of what was actually taken. If it's, a letter from Obama or a letter from Little Rocket Man, is that enough to really say that it was jeopardizing the country's security? I think we need more clarity on all of that, because, and Dershowitz agrees, he writes that to justify an indictment of the leading candidate to challenge the president in next year's election, even with the recording statements, this case isn't nearly as strong as the one they had with Nixon. In Nixon's case, he was almost certainly guilty of destroying evidence, he writes, bribing witnesses and other acts of obstruction. Many of the charges in this case are matters of a degree. So what they're going to go back to is that infamous tape recording that nobody's actually heard. You know this is a live show because here I am drinking my water in the middle. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts to this live program, do join us. We're here every day on the YouTube channel, and you can join the conversation live because we have so many people here, part of our conversation, joining us live, including Mike O'Donnell, who's making the point that Hillary Clinton had a private server, which was pretty bizarre, right, as Secretary of State. So if they're not going to prosecute that, what are they doing here? Does the crime sort of fit the punishment? Does it fit it for the country? I mean, again, to have such a historic move here that is damaging on so many fronts and making us increasingly look like a banana republic. So these are the issues at stake. But if you are listening right now on the Apple Podcast, please make sure you come over and subscribe to the YouTube channel and vice versa. If you don't have to go now, but when we finish, I would love for you to be able to go over to the podcast where this airs. Again, they're the audio version. So if you're out for a run or a walk or just listening in your car, you can listen to the audio there. Plus, it just helps the algorithms. Full disclosure, the more people that follow it, the more people that rate it, the more people that comment on it, even if you're not listening every day, it helps. It helps the algorithms there over on Apple Podcasts. I was watching Dan Bongino talk about that the other day. He actually made a comment where he's like, you don't even have to listen. You just have to follow, which cracked me up. Anyway, it does help. Great to see, again, all of you right here. So thank you, Dan. I'm getting compliments from you as well. My hairstyle today, this was a quickie because we got a little ponytail, again, for those that are just listening on Apple Podcasts going on. But I'm shocked that it's come to this. And my concern, frankly, is that it's not just Trump, because a lot of people on the left would like you to believe that he was so extraordinarily awful that they had to do this. That is the mandate. And yet, what do we see over and over again? They're going after others, including Ron DeSantis, for fear that Ron DeSantis might be the next one. I mean, the idea that you're somehow comparing him to Hitler, which that comparison has been made with Ron DeSantis. I mean, I find these things just so disrespectful, frankly, to history, to all the people that died to try and save the world in World War II. I find it disrespectful to all the Jews that were massacred during World War II. To make these kinds of comparisons, I mean, that is really kind of out in left field. And yet this is what they do, including, there was the one that made the comparison on the Tony's Awards the other night to the Grand Wizard, which I've played for you, but I'll play it again because you need to hear it and just think about what this woman is saying. And they're trying to basically, through pop culture, try and get a message across that anyone on the right, including Ron DeSantis, just in case he's the one that is actually maybe going to get the nomination if they're able to put Trump away as they'd like, she's making sure that everybody knows how bad she thinks Ron DeSantis is. I mean, terrible stuff.
And while I am certain that the current Grand Wizard, Governor of my home state of Florida will be changing.
Okay, so just so we know where they stand, it doesn't matter who's there. It's just the fact that they are on the right and the left wants their team to win, and they're going to do whatever they need to do to, I guess, ensure that, including making accusations that are pretty darn horrific in the case of this particular actress. I guess she's a singer of some sort. I'd never heard of her. Danae Benton is her name. But, you know, I haven't been to a Broadway play recently. Anyway, she's some kind of Broadway singer, actress. Not that great, frankly. I listened to her because I was curious. And, you know, I am a former classical singer, so I take singing kind of seriously. She was kind of a nothing. Anyway, maybe it was the song. In her defense, maybe it was the song. So she was singing and she's giving out some kind of award and attacking DeSantis in the process. I mean, is that necessary? Again, you know, why can't we appreciate singing and Broadway musicals and award shows for just that? Like, why do we have to introduce politics into everything? because it's such a zero-sum game for them. They just want to win, 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 win. I want to, again, go out to the viewers and the listeners of the program. Thank you, JoJo, for your kind comments on Debbie. Debbie D'Souza was just joining us, and I just thought it was perfect to have Debbie on today because Debbie is from Venezuela originally and very, very familiar with the tactics employed by the socialist team there, led, of course, by Hugo Chavez. Maduro's now in charge. And so many of their policies led to the full-on destruction, frankly, destruction. And I'm not underestimating that in any way of that country, because it went from the highest per capita income in all of Latin and South America to the lowest. And you now have a situation where people don't have power on a regular basis. They don't have access to food. The entire country has really been decimated economically because of these policies. And this is why it's so important to think about policy and how much policy matters. Economic policy, foreign policy. We want a strong economy. We want a strong country. And we want a free country, because we want to be able to call out leadership when they're doing things that are wrong. And we don't want to constantly be told when we do so, it's a form of misinformation. That is completely out of line with who we are, who we historically have been, and of course, the First Amendment. And so that's what's sort of feeling increasingly at stake. And that we really can't allow for. Now, can we? It is so good to have all of you here today. I love seeing you. I love this format. I encourage you to subscribe to the channel. I am glad to see. I see John Palmer's back. Cigar Texan, good to have you here. Dan Abel, really good to see all of you. David as well. Look, there's a lot at stake. It's a historic day. None of this is good. But it's important we stay on top of this news. I'll see you tomorrow.